Translation. If one tries to explain the Vedic literature in a different way, he is indulging in imagination, and in an interpretation of the self-evident Vedic version is simply imaginary. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. When a conditioned soul is purified, he is called a devotee. A devotee has his relationship only with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his only occupational duty is to execute devotional service to satisfy the Lord. This service is rendered through the Lord's representative, the spiritual master, Yasya Devi Para Bhaktir Yatya Devi Tathagura. When the devotee executes devotional service properly, he attains the highest perfection of life, love of Godhead. Savayam Pumsham Saive Pumsham Para Dharma Yato Bhaktir Hadakshaji. The ultimate goal of understanding the Vedas is to be elevated to the platform of rendering loving service to the Lord. The Mayavadi philosophers, however, consider the central point of relationship to be the impersonal Brahman, the function of the living entity to be the acquisition of knowledge of Brahman, resulting in detachment from material activity, and the ultimate goal of life to be liberation, or merging into the existence of the Supreme. All of this, however, is simply due to the imagination of the conditioned soul. It simply opposes him to material activities. One should always remember that all Vedic literatures are self-evident. No one is allowed to interpret the Vedic verses. If one does so, he indulges in imagination, and that has no value. Om Gyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pacharine Shesha Shunyavadi Pastatya Deshatarine. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasti Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this is Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya wanted to instruct Lord Chaitanya in Vedanta philosophy, because that was a standard for Mayavadis and impersonalists, that they maintain their strength by intelligence. By understanding something properly, we can develop conviction. If we don't understand something properly, it's difficult to be focused. So they would use that, and they would spend their days discussing and studying this Vedanta philosophy. This was originally by Shankaracharya. So we'll be hearing in the following verses why Shankaracharya introduced this Mayavad philosophy. So the beginning of this verse or the purport is explaining about, it's leading them from the last purport, which is explaining that Varnashram is a tradition. In other words, one would act according to his conditioning in a therapeutic way, so that gradually by changing the mentality of our of particular activity, the intelligence and mind would be focused in a different direction. So everybody has a particular, you know, conditioning, and so it's not easy to change that conditioning. You know, man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. So it takes time, you know. And Prabhupada said that, you know, knowledge is not just, it's not just enough to have knowledge, but we have to have realization. So from that Varnashram system, it's a long way. It's so long. You know, you would get somebody who's, you would get somebody to follow it first. The people who lived outside the Varnashram, they call Antajars. You know, they would, if they stayed in the kingdom, they would execute them. Simple as that. You can't stay in the Vedic. Well, I'm assuming they would do that, but they tell them, you have to go and live somewhere else. And so I was asking, I was in Russia, I think I mentioned this last time, anyway, I'll say it again. I was in Russia and I said to, you know, it was getting cold, it was like November time, and I thought, why would anybody want to stay in a climate like this? And so I said to Bhakti Vigya Maharaj, why, you know, I asked him that question, he says, it's a mode of passion. And I thought, what sort of answer is that, you know, it's a mode of passion. And then, you know, I thought about it, you know, he's a lot more intelligent than me. And then, ding, the penny dropped. You know, it's like the mode of passion means the enjoying spirit. And, you know, in the Vedic culture, you wouldn't be allowed to just enjoy it whimsically. So a mode of passion means it should be controlled. But when we have uncontrolled passion, then we're not prepared to be controlled. Then we have to go and live like in the prison, you know, not in the prison, but in a more restricted area. So, you know, the whole nature of the material world is if you don't follow, it gets worse. So you have to go and live in a climate which is not really suitable. And you have to eat things which are not the best. It's second best. And then eventually, you know, you have to go and live in Greenland or something like that, where, you know, what is there in Greenland but the people living there? And you're conditioned to living like that. And so, you know, a perfect arrangement of the Lord to, you know, to shake people up. So, you know, from getting to that position, you would have to, you would accept the Vedic culture. So, okay, your particular duty is this, your particular nature is this. And we would work in a way that eventually we would see that we would get what we wanted, but we wouldn't be satisfied. You know, we're working under regulation, which means it's controlled, and we have the intelligence to see, I'm not going anywhere here. And so then you would actually, there would be the Brahmins who would be teaching all kinds, the different kinds of Brahmins, as the Vipras, and there would be the Vipras are learned Brahmins. They would be teaching higher. But initially, there's Brahmins who teach so many different subjects. Brahman means a teacher. It doesn't necessarily mean he teaches Vaishnava philosophy. But he teaches in the Vedic system, so people are actually gradually, they attain knowledge and they're elevated. And so they would inquire from the Brahman, he would see that this person's ready for. So, that, you know, they would start to become more introspective and start to reduce the material attachments and engage more in understanding the self, jnana, knowledge, what's the real situation in this world. And, you know, how many lifetimes do we have to stay in that situation? And then the next thing is that we would actually start to become proficient at jnana and understand, you know, that we're actually not the body and we should be trying to achieve an higher purpose. And then we would come to meditation, which would be the yoga system, and eventually if we got the association of a devotee, we could come to the point of rendering devotional service. So all this is mentioned. I think it's in the fourth chapter, the different processes, you know, transcendental knowledge. But if all that activity doesn't come to understanding, doesn't come to knowledge, which it quite frequently does, We get so much into the enjoying spirit that we lose it all. And therefore in 13th chapter it says that if one is fortunate to hear from the right source, then he can actually understand. Then he can start to make progress. He can start from the point of where meeting a devotee. So this is why Lord Chaitanya is called Mahavadanaya. He's so munificent that he knows that it's just like everything's been lost. Advaita Acharya saw everything's lost. The people are so degraded. And so he came and he gave this option of hearing, this hearing process. And this is what the option is, that he's giving Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So to come to the path of devotional service, you know, Prabhupada says he's actually very fortunate. We can't understand our good fortune. So this is the Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He's become fortunate. And originally he was preaching. So this is a standard process, isn't it? When you meet people, if you don't let them speak, it's difficult to actually give them anything back. Is that right? Anybody notice? This is a good auto. If you do books, you'll realize that. If you don't do books, it'd be difficult to realize. But, you know, you learn very quickly. Otherwise, you suffer. You suffer and you don't get anywhere. So we were talking about Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Now, can you understand the position of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya? He's like the most erudite scholar in the world. He's actually Brihaspati. He's come to this material world to perform Lord Chaitanya in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And by performing in that pastime, he will get liberation from the material world. He's actually a demigod or a priest of the demigods. So very, very learned. And, you know, how is it? How is it somebody so learned that he's so, you know, so unintelligent? You know, it says here that, in Shastra, it says here that there's a direct meaning. How is it that somebody can read something and construe something else? But he has. And why is this? It's envy. When a little bit of envy creeps into the heart, how it happens, Prabhupada said, don't even try to understand. You know, he gives the example of the fruit on a tree that, you know, the two sages are sat watching and they notice a bird land on a tree and immediately the bird lands, it drops the fruit. And so one says that it was because the bird landed, you know, it vibrated the tree and it dropped. And the other one will say, no, it was going to drop anyway, it's ripe. Well, what's the point? You know, it's the same. It's the same result. So coming back to envy, it's just like what's this virus called? Yeah? COVID-19, is it? So you know, a little bit of COVID goes up your nose or whatever, and then what happens is it's like it's so small, it's not even. You wouldn't even think about it. But then it stops here and it starts to, takes 4 days, by the way. After 4 days, it starts to manifest. And, they say lemon juice is good for it. If you can catch it within that first, but we're going up a point a little bit here. It goes over your nose and then it starts to, you know, incubate. Is that the word? Incubate. And then it gets bigger. So, you know, why do we get, you know, Krishna could just, you know, give us all a vaccine. We'd be okay in the material world. So, anyway, it gives us free will. This is one point. And so, so it manifests and it spreads. And this is what happens to a person in the material world. It is envy actually increases due to material association. So much so that even somebody like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he can have so much knowledge, but the envy gets in the way, so therefore he misinterprets everything. What happens when we're envious? We don't admit the truth, do we? We don't admit the truth. We actually want to satisfy our own understanding of what the truth is. And what's the truth? It means that, you know, I'm the enjoyer, I'm the center. Even subconsciously, we're doing that. And so then we twist a little bit. Ah, that's it. It all works now. The philosophy works. So we have to be, you know, we have to actually be free from envy. This Nirmatsuranam Satam, this is what Bhagavatam says. If we want to be free from envy, then we can become free from envy. If we understand the problem, we can understand the cure. And so Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is not aware of that. And what's the way to become free from envy? It says by hearing. And there's two types of hearing. Satam prasangam mamavirya samvido. So this means in the association of the devotees, we hear Srimad Bhagavatam. We hear the Shastras. And if it's depending on the realization of the speaker, then we get that realization. And, you know, we gradually become freed from that envy. And then it says real devotional service begins. And what is real devotional service? It's spontaneous. It means that we're doing it our own free will. So we're working through that system with this envy. So it says that actually, what's that verse? Let's have a look. Here we are. Yatredyante katamrishtas krishnasya pasamo yataha nirveram yatrabhuteshu nodvego yatrakashchana. He says that, translation means that, as soon as we start discussing topics about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, transcendental topics, it says, immediately we're situated on the spiritual platform. We find satisfaction. It's not only that, we become freed from envy. At least for the time being. Anybody notice that? If we actually listen to Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, at least for the first 10 minutes at least, it's, you know, to keep concentration, not so easy. But, you know, you're like, it's like all the problems. So that's what happens. By regularly hearing Satam Prasangam, then eventually this envy disappears. But, you know, also, it says that this is not enough. It says, Etavan evaloke smim pumsam dharma parasmisaha bhakti yoga bhagavati tan nama grihanadibi. It says, devotional service beginning with the chanting of the holy name of the Lord is the ultimate religious principle in the age of Kali, or for human society, sorry. So the chanting has to be there. Actually, the chanting is the beginning and the end. All the philosophy is there to convince us about the chanting and to convince others. There's one devotee called Dr. Fakir Mohan. Probably some of you remember him. He used to come here. He was an associate of Gaur Govindaswamy. And his classes were all about chanting. You know, he was actually an elevated soul. He'd spent a lifetime as a brahmachari. He didn't even wear white. He was so humble. He was a Sanskrit scholar. He was head of a Sanskrit college, and he was traveling, and he was a city, and he was talking about Naam Prabhu. And when he spoke, you know, he used to be reaching for your bead bag, you know. He was so potent. He realized that all I have to do is chant Hare Krishna, actually. But, you know, we have to get people to that point, and Lord Chaitanya has to get Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to that point. So, where to go from here? So I'm going to have to do a little bit, you have to be a little bit patient, is that all right? Because I'll be looking at these notes and going to pages in these books. All right, so this is not, usually it should be spontaneous, you know. But unfortunately it's not so spontaneous. Yeah, we've got to the point of Vard. We're speaking about Vard quite a bit later. He's speaking about Vard quite a bit lately, especially in the Bhakti. I don't know whether Matajis are hearing about this, but in Bhagavad Gita, in the 10th chapter, it's talking about three things. It's talking about Vitanda. Have you heard of Vitanda? Vitanda means that it don't matter what happens, I'm going to win this argument. Does anybody recognize that? Anybody identify with that? You know, I'll bring anything in as long as I win the argument. So this is Vitanda. So this, you know, you don't get very far with Vitanda. And the other one is called Jalpa. It means, it's a bit more crafty than Vitanda. You know what I mean? You know, your aim is to win. No, Vitanda's aim is to defeat the other person. You don't even care, you just want to defeat him. And you do anything to defeat. And the other one is Jalpa, where, you know, you want to actually prove your point. You want to win. But it can be a little bit crafty. You know, you'll actually agree with the other person to some degree and make it sound as if, but at the end of the day, you just actually, what do you call that when you actually agree with the person? And, you know, it's a straw man argument, is it? Is that what it is? You know, you give a false argument and you lead him away from the real argument and then you win the argument. Is that right? Straw man? So they tend to be a bit like that, Jalpa. Jalpa, 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 you know. And then, but, you know, is that really going to actually get to the root of a particular philosophical point? You know, it's useless, isn't it? You've proved your point. It may be correct, it may not be. You may have confused another person or made an enemy when he finds out, you know. So then, you know, the actual standard is to come to Vard. Vard means the conclusion. And so Vard is not just a conclusion, it's a process. To get a real conclusion, there has to be a proper process and a proper interaction. And so I was going to explain about this from this, this is a book on hermeneutics. And I earmarked different pages in just to, you know, highlight how it works in, you know, just so we get an understanding. I know Mother Chintamani was speaking the other day. That's one particular, you know, one particular angle of hermeneutics, that first of all you have to hear what the other person's saying. So, you know, you're starting to practice hermeneutics. And then there are other things to take into consideration which we'll discover or uncover. So 177. Yeah, so it says actually, just going back to the point into the original verse, two verses before this, it talks about Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. What was he doing? Which one was he on the platform of? Anybody remember? He's a Mayavadi. Eh? No, it was Vitanda. He was just, it says in the purport, he was, you know, he was just bringing all arguments in. He wasn't going to be defeated. You know, he's actually the biggest scholar in the world. And this young sannyasi who has tried to, you know, he finishes up the sannyasi, he's actually more experienced in the philosophy than he is. So, you know, it's like, first thing you do is defend, isn't it? So he's defending himself and he's throwing arguments in from everywhere. But Lord Chaitanya, no, he's a supreme personality of God, he's in the heart, and Lord Chaitanya can defeat any argument that he makes. When he was younger, he used to give an argument to his playmates or his school friends and ask them to defeat it. When they couldn't, he used to defeat it. So, you know, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya hasn't got a chance. So at the end of the day, he just actually defeats Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and he leaves him completely speechless. And we'll hear about that in a few verses on. But at least, you know, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is a cultured person. Because he has culture, he knows this process of dialogue, and he tried to get out of it. He went out of the process. So now he's been brought back into the process of Vard, and the ultimate result of Vard is Samvard, or Vaishnav Vard. We can use this process of understanding something in different disciplines, but we're specifically applying it to, you know, Vaishnav philosophy. So what's the definition? We'll come to the definition. Shri Radha Govardhana Ki Jai. What's the definition of hermeneutics? I'll read the definition. By ISKCON hermeneutics, we refer to the discipline and methodology that considers how to appropriately study, understand, apply, explain, and perpetuate the teachings of Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. Such a discipline comes from the Vaishnava tradition itself. So that's what it says here. When we read the books, the answer's there in the books. It tells us what to do and how to do it. Does anybody know a verse which is actually in the Bhagavatam, which actually gives this? It's in the, give you a clue, it's in the second canto, 9th chapter, verse 31. It's talking about, you know, it's when Lord Brahma is being spoken to by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's giving him the all he needs to understand this transcendental science. Let's see if I can find the verse. How's it going now? I can't remember the verse. Oh, I've got it here, just a minute. Anyway, it's I'll recite it later. Anyway, he's talking to Brahma. He says, my dear Brahma, he says, this is the information required to understand this science, and all the tools are there. When we think of tools, we think of, you know, but there's actually also tools in which we can understand things, certain ways of thinking, certain principles, or not principles, but certain, what's the word? Tool. If I want a better word. What's another word for tool? Certain phrases or certain understandings we can use. We'll do that in a little bit. And so right at the beginning, you know, Lord Krishna's telling Lord Brahma that it's a process and he's giving him the tools to understand it. I'll give you an example, shall I? We've talked about Vard, Jalpa and Vitanda. So, what does hermeneutics, how do we make it work? What does it do? It keeps us within the boundaries of interpretation and protects from philosophical deviation and personal agenda. So the boundaries are set so that you don't, you know, you can be stopped. But that's not actually applicable. We come back to the point. It gives ability to apply Shastra for time, place and circumstance. So sometimes people make a statement about Shastra as if it's actually all pervading. It's actually in every time, every place, every circumstance. Some things are that. And what do they call? They call Siddhanta. This is a Siddhanta. We don't go outside. These things are actually true in all time, place and circumstance. But the, you know, the process of Shastra, it may not be true for all time, place and circumstance. It depends which Shastra it's come from. It depends on the hierarchy of Shastra. Depends who spoke it, what his realization is, what was the subject matter, where was it spoken, what was the intention behind speaking that. Just like Prabhupada. Prabhupada, he used to say, you know, the came to him and said that once some of his sannyasis, one of the sannyasis had fallen down. It was another one in the chain of fall downs. And Prabhupada said, "That's it, no more sannyas." And then, a little bit later, he started initiating sannyasis. So you get the point. He said that. He was actually really, I won't say Prabhupada gets irritated, probably spiritually irritated, that, he's making so much effort, and yet he couldn't keep the vows. And so he thought, it's just a waste. It seems like a waste of time. So automatically you speak like that. You may speak like it out of frustration, or you may speak like it to make a point. That I really mean this, start booking your ideas up. But, a person who doesn't understand this, they'll say, okay, no more sannyas from now to the end of time. We just have to follow Prabhupada's instructions. So no, we don't do that. What else is it? Gives the ability to encourage diversity, flexibility within our sampradaya. At the same time, gives ongoing, fixed process and conclusion. So I want to give another example now. A good example. Everybody's read the Bhagavatam, or part of it, right? Everybody's read the first canto. Yeah? So in the first canto, there's a pastime of Arjuna and Ashwatthama. Yeah? And what does Krishna... Ashwatthama, he goes up to three young boys, completely innocent. They're actually sons of the Pandavas, and cuts all the heads off while they're asleep. Now, that would make headlines even today, you know what I mean? It takes a lot to make headlines nowadays, there's so much going off, but that would make headlines today, and this is like 5,000 years ago. And so, Ashwatthama immediately thinks, I better get out of, I better leave here. And when Arjuna understands, he promises Draupadi that, my dear lady, today I will bring back this culprit and you will take your bath standing on his head. And so, it's clear what the punishment should be. And so Arjuna sets off, and Arjuna sees him coming, and Ashwatthama sees him coming, and he becomes stricken with fear. And so he throws a brahmastra, and he counteracts that. And eventually Arjuna catches him, and he binds him like a slave. And Krishna says, don't spare him. Kill the culprit immediately. And he gives reasons from Shastra why he should kill him. One who kills innocent people, people who are asleep, people who are actually intoxicated. So he puts immediately, he's in the category, they should be immediately killed. And Arjuna, this is coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What would you do if, Krishna said that to you? Go straight away, no problem. You can't get any higher authority. So, no sinful reaction. But Arjuna, he was more intelligent. And he was following his heart. Has anybody done that? Sometimes, even though you think, wait a minute, I don't quite feel good about this, And so he didn't. And so then he brought Ashwatthama back, and he threw him before Draupadi. And Draupadi, she had high sentiments as well. She was a cultured lady, it says. Can you imagine somebody's just had their five sons killed? There's nothing more dear to a to a mother than her sons or her daughters, especially sons. And they've just been brutally murdered in their sleep. And yet she had so much forethought that she said, actually, release him immediately. He's our spiritual master. He's a son of Dronacharya. Dronacharya is no longer here, so we have to accept him. And Prabhupada gives the argument that actually this is not a sound argument. He says, you know, this is a natural inclination of a woman to be soft-hearted. Doesn't have the same discrimination as a man. And so therefore Prabhupada didn't really agree with that in his purport. And then later on she carries on speaking and she gives more arguments. And she eventually comes with the argument that Kripi, the wife of Dronacharya, will actually be heartbroken. The reason she didn't enter the fire when Dronacharya left this world is because her son was alive. So this is a standard. Usually they would commit sati rite and enter into the fire with their husband. And so it says, don't make Kripi grieve like I'm grieving. I don't want anybody to experience this. Such compassion. Whew. What do we do if somebody, you know, gets a bit more prasadam than us, or, you know, well, they just cut his head off, you know what I mean? But, you know, she was so cultured, so elevated, and actually Prabhupada accepts this, and Krishna accepts that subliminally. And he said, so Krishna said, he didn't actually go one way or the other. He said, okay, you have to please Draupadi and you have to please me and Bhishma and Bhima. And Yudhisthira agreed also. He is actually Dharmaraj, or the son of Dharmaraj, sorry. And so, you know, Arjuna could understand Krishna's equivocal instructions and immediately sliced the jewel, which is the emblem of a Brahman, up from his head. So he took his caste away, which is to be dishonored is worse than death, they said, for a cultured person. But he didn't kill the body. He says, because there's no injunction for killing a Brahman. So this is an example is how hermeneutics work. It's not so straightforward. It's actually taken to deeper level. Siddhanta Baliyatite na kara alas iha hoyate Krishna lage suridat manas. This is an instruction from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. It said one should not neglect to actually discuss Shastra. It may be a bit argumentative sometimes, he says, but actually this is not bad. He said, this is the way we become very, very strong in devotional service if we discuss. If we discuss according to Samvad, if we're actually able to hear the other person. So there's some qualities of doing this. So I'd like to explain these, or read these qualities. It makes us introspective. Here we are, the qualities. Supporting values or conduct. Humility and service mood. Backed up by Bhagavad Gita. What's the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita? Instruction, you know, knowledge starts with humility. So, first of all, we have to be in a humble state of mind. Before we go into a conversation, in order to perform it properly, we have to think, am I just trying to win this conversation? Am I prepared to be humble? Am I prepared to listen to the other person? If we're not, forget it. Humility and service mood. Fidelity to text and tradition. If the other person makes a statement from Shastra and it's actually correct, am I going to accept it? Discerning the truth. Again in the 13th chapter, last item of knowledge is to search for the gyan, to search for the conclusion. Honesty and authentic conversation. Vaad, openness to change and transformation. Vaad, benevolence and generosity. What does Krishna say about benevolence and generosity in Bhagavad Gita? Does it please him? He says, there's no servant more dear to me than one who preaches, who understands and then preaches it. But will we become dear to Krishna if we're preaching something which is off the rails? you know, will actually mislead people. So this is really important. Then the next point is, there are certain principles that we should follow. Principles. What's the first principle? What would you think is the first principle? It's so obvious we might even overlook it. Sri Krishna is the object, purpose, and ultimate goal of all Shastric knowledge. That's the first. What's the difference between a principle and an aim? Principle doesn't change, but aims may change. So this is Sengwan Shabda. You know, we are in the Bhakti Shastra Shabda Praman, don't we? We hear about other. What's the other Praman? Anuman and Pratyaksha. These are different pramans or evidences. Shabda praman is the highest praman or source of evidence. And scripture provides a theory and a method for its own understanding. Jnanam paramam guyam me tadvijnanam samanvitam rasahasyam tadangam cha. So this is a point here that's being made. It's all Shastric. Identifying categories of texts, categories of statements within text illuminates the meaning. Hierarchies of Shastra. One which I like here is, I'll come straight to this, authentic understanding an exposition of Shastra are consistent with Siddhanta. So there, you know, there's Siddhanta, which is given in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, 10 principles. So these principles, not principles, they're actually called tenets. They don't change. It's a Siddhanta. When we are discussing something, we have to refer to Siddhanta. Is this in line with Siddhanta? And like that. And what is these tenets? Sorry, I'm getting a bit confused here. Anyway, what we'll do, actually, it's 25 to what time do we finish? Do we finish at usual time or on Tuesday? Okay, so I'll give you some things to think about anyway. Is that okay? Something to chew on while you're having prasadam. Here we are. Killing demons is our mission. The Krishna conscious movement is spreading all over the world with two aims: to establish Krishna as the supreme personality of Godhead and to kill the pretenders who falsely present themselves as avatars. The preachers of the Krishna conscious movement must carry this conviction very carefully within their hearts and kill the demons who in many tactful ways vilify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna. If we take shelter of Nrisimha Dev and Prahlad Maharaj, it will be easier to kill the demons who are against Krishna and thus re-establish Krishna's supremacy. So, you know, if the wrong person hears that, then, you know, there'll be some... it won't go very well, will it, you know? But, you know, a neophyte devotee can actually... In fact, I was giving the example of one... I've told this before, but just to exemplify how people can misunderstand that. I mean, there was a jail service. Remember, I've given this example before. And they used to put books in jails, but there was no ability to actually visit the prisoners. They just read the books. So, you know, when they eventually got permission, they visited the prison. And the screws. Come and talk to this one here. He's driving us all mad. He's read this Bhagavad Gita and he's just preaching to everybody all the time. See if you can straighten him out a little bit. And so they went, and they said, so, you know, you're really enthusiastic about the Bhagavad Gita. Best book I've ever read. He said, and they asked him, he said, so what conclusion did you derive from Bhagavad Gita? He said, I conclude that when I get out of prison, there's six people I have to immediately kill. And it's in Bhagavad Gita. What are those six people? It said any ordinary man can kill them. So, like that. So we can all ever think about that, about killing the demons, okay? Any questions or comments? Or shall we just close here?
As you mentioned, even in example of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he would play sometime and he would establish certain truth, nobody could defeat, and he would defeat. And then he will establish something completely opposite and defeat that again, and it was endless. So in that sense, to study the Vedas, can you really establish truth anyway? Therefore, it's no wonder there are many school of thoughts, you know, just vast knowledge, and in one sense, is it any value anyway in study of it?
Yeah, Mahajana Yena Gatasapanta, that, Tarko Pratishta Shrutaya Vibhina. Yeah, you know, Tarko Pratishta means Shrutaya, means Shruti, Vibhina. Vibhina means there's so many scriptures, like you're saying, and they're all saying different things. What's the next verse? Tarko Pratishta Shrutaya Vibhina Nashab Rishi Yasha. And there's so many different rishis, there's so many different munis and rishis who all have different ideas. So we're going to be confused again. And then the next line says, the solid truth about real religious principles is Mahajana Yena Gatasapanta, that we have to follow in the footsteps of the Mahajans. So our Mahajan is Lord Brahma. You know, there's Swayambhu Narada Shambhu, Koma Kapilomanu, Balado Janako Bhishmo, Bali Vaisakhi Payam. So the 12 Mahajans. So we have to be in a disciplic succession from one of the Mahajans. And then we can understand the Shastra properly according to Vaishnava principles. And even amongst the Vaishnavas, if you read the commentaries, you'll find that the commentaries differ. So, another part about this Samvad is that we shouldn't expect there'll be a conclusion all the time. Sometimes we have to learn to go, okay, I understand the different arguments, but it's not always conclusive. And Krishna actually, I don't know where I read this, but Krishna actually says that for a devotee who's fixed up, pure devotee, then whatever he says is right. Because, obviously we have to be careful, We don't just accept what they say like that. But, Krishna says that, and he says that about the Brahmins. If they actually curse somebody, it might be wrong, but he follows it through. So there's a principle there in why Krishna does that. So, we keep in a disciplic succession, and we're not trying to, boil everything down so that we've got a lid on it. We can't do that with Shastra. Some things we have to accept. There's going to be some dichotomy, but we learn to cooperate together. Like that. Okay, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaura Premanandini.